And through that process, like, it is about the stories, you know? So, yeah, that race could have ended well. It wouldn't have changed a thing in my life. But, you know, by learning to deal with, like, a little bit of adversity, I think it made me so much stronger as a person, not just in running. So, what I would say is, like, to look forward to the failures just as much as the successes, because I think that that's where the magic of this is, that in running, we can go all in on ourselves and learn and find out the answers, find out some answers. Even if those answers are just, you know, when the worst things happen, no matter what those are, I can get back up.
Scott, we are grateful for our vendor partners, and one of them we're very grateful for is Exoskin.
They make great products for us trail runners, and the latest that I have been enjoying are these arm sleeves. You got to go check them out at exoskin.us.
When it comes to socks, when it comes to toe socks, which we talk about on this podcast, or the new product coming out, Scott, you get to tease it.
Well, it hasn't come out yet, but they are doing some research and some manufacturing on some new underwear. So it's not the compression underwear that you're used to. It's a little bit lighter. And I've been running, I've run twice in them. And boy, are you going to like these.
Scott, is it possible that we don't have to wash these for 3 or 4 weeks, just like the socks?
I don't know about that, but I'll tell you, it's like wearing nothing at all. It's like naked running.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Go to exoskin.us, check out all their great gear, and we'll let you know when this new prototype underwear is out and available for you guys.
Native aluminum-free deodorant is a great addition to your 2021 routine.
Native cares about what you're going to put in your armpits. That's why their deodorant ingredients include things you've actually heard of, like coconut oil and shea butter.
Plus, you have options. Native has a line of sensitive deodorants for people with baking soda sensitivities. And their plastic-free deodorants helps you cut down on the plastic consumption that we're doing with our planet. And you want to try something a little different? Check out their rotating seasonal scents.
Don and I have been using Native for years now, but if you haven't, they have a risk-free option. All their stuff comes with free shipping in the U.S., plus 30-day returns and exchanges.
Hey, Scott, they even have a subscription to it, so you never have to worry about buying it at the right time again.
This is what you need to do to get 20% off. Go to nativedeo.com/trail. That's nativedeo.com/trail, and use the promo code TRAIL at checkout.
For 20% off.
Over the years, people have asked us, Don, Scott, how can we support the podcast? Well, you're supporting it by supporting our partner sponsors. And that's one good way. And we have another way.
And we do appreciate that, because we have a relationship with those partners, just like we have a relationship with you. And we want to do a good job for you. And that's why we're asking to become Patreon members.
You can go to our website, trailrunnernation.com. Up at the top, there's a thing called Support Us. And we have a Patreon page that we've created.
We really appreciate your support. It's still free, whether you sign up or not.
And one thing that Don and I were very adamant about is, if you're going to support us with a Patreon subscription or pledge, we wanted to make sure that you were getting that back in added benefits. We have a lot of different benefits depending on the level that you're in, including a free entry into the Coccapelli 1000. Tell us a little bit about that, Don.
Oh, it's a race that you'll love. We don't have a real destination, but we know there's a lot of altitude on it. We know it's 1,000 miles or kilometers, depending on which system you use. And we promise one aid station with boiling water. Bring your own potatoes.
And one of the things that we're actually pretty excited about is the bonus miles. At the mid-level subscription, you can get the bonus miles, which is the recording after the recording. Every time we talk to these great guests, we stop the recording and we end up having, inevitably, these great discussions that nobody ever hears. Now you get the opportunity to hear those after the record recordings.
And you thought there was no edits on the podcast? Oh, believe me, there's no edits here.
Anyway, if you find it in your heart where you can help support the podcast, that's great. If you don't, the quality and the podcast and the content that we've been producing for the last 9 years, it's still going to be there. It's still going to be free.
No, don't start recording yet.
Good. Oh, crap.
What?
Press record?
Green's not record, right?
That's really out of my pay grade.
People, Don did not prep, and I think there are a few more bullet points that we'll be discussing.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name's Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. And it's 2021, Scott. We should have this down pat by now. And we did a lot of rehearsal, and if anybody was privy to the long conversation before the podcast started, you would think we would start this with just such skill, executed, flawless, but it's absolutely...
silky smooth.
It was better the first time around. So, we're here with the coaches, Scott. We're here with Ian Sharman, Chrissy Moyle, and David Roche, and we're here to have some fun and learn some things.
We are, and this is the beginning of the year. If you're listening to this in December, it's the raw. You're behind, but it's the beginning of the year, and there's a lot of New Year's resolutions. People may be thinking, you know what, I may want to try to get out there on the trail and try something new, explore a trail. And we thought, who better to talk to than these experienced coaches?
Well, not only do they have their own experience, but they have the experience of all the people they've coached. And so what we've asked them to do is come with a story, because stories are meaningful. Stories bring lessons to us, and we can remember them. And so we thought, what better than the coach to tell their story, their aha moment, what helped them through a tough spot or in their running career that they still carry that today? What was one of your aha moments that you still pack in your hydration pack to go out on a long run? And so that's what we're doing. Now, Scott and I each have a story too, because we wanted to get involved and we needed to fill 50 minutes. And so,
and where this all came from, coaches, you don't know this. Where this all came from was Don and I were out on a run, and we started thinking, okay, how can we roll this into a podcast with the coaches? And he told me a story. Don and I have known each other for probably 70 years. And I think I know all of his stories. He told me a story, or started to tell me a story, that I had never heard before. And I said, I love that story. People should know about that story. It's a running story. So that's where this all came from.
So coaches, are you game?
Definitely.
Let's
yeah.
do it.
I'm in.
Okay. Tell them the dice thing, because we have to have some kind of gamification always with TRN.
Well, you know, it's very tough to decide who's going to tell the next story or who's going to tell the first story, because I anticipate they're all going to be memorable and they're going to be great. So who do you pick? And we thought, we'll let the die decide. We'll roll a dice and we'll assign a number to each person. And I'll do that assigning now. Ian, you're number one. Chrissy, you're number two. David, you're number three. Scott, you're number four. And I'm number five. So when we roll the die and that number comes up, that person tells a story. And I'm sure you're all thinking, how can these numbers come up perfectly? What if one repeats? We have a solution for that, Scott. What is it?
This was your idea. So well, if let's say Chrissy's number two, if we roll two, she tells her story, and if two comes up again, then she gets to decide who goes next. Right? Is that what you decided?
Yeah, this sounds like a lot of fun. So, Scott, you have an app with the actual, with the die on it. We know it's
heaven forbid I would find an actual die. I had to download an app. But here we go. You ready? I'm gonna roll it. And guess what? It's a two. Chrissy, you get to go first.
Oh, was that staged? No.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't see it. We want video proof of that, Scott. We want to see that on your camera. Very good. Okay.
There we go. All right on. So the story that I carry in my hydration pack, and one that keeps me going, would be the very first ultra I ran. The story has been in my book and in other podcasts and written interviews, and it's the one with my mom. I was 22 years old when I ran my first 50K, and there was all, believe it or not, that was still of the thought of, is she developed enough? Will her ovaries fall out? Like, should she be running this far? So there's all these kind of skepticism. My mom's a registered nurse, retired now, and the doctor that she worked for was kind of putting some of this stuff in her ear. As stubborn as I am, she knew better than to tell me no, but she did tell me that if at any aid station I looked pale or not with it or any kind of symptom, that like she would pull me, she would get me out of that race. So 50K. Mom met me at all five aid stations. It was at the Chuckin at 50K. That's why that race is still so important to me. And I put it on almost every year, except for the pandemic year. And at each aid station, I would roll in and no matter what, biggest smile ever, just best biggest smile I could muster for Ma. Furthest I'd ever run prior to that was 20, 22 miles. So once you break into that new distance, there's all sorts of unknown, like this is the furthest steps I've ever taken. And I went through the emotional ringer on that, but I still had the biggest smile ever whenever I would see Mom. Fast forward a year later, I was dealing with an IT band injury. I was at the aid stations crewing for somebody else, a friend at the time. And I'd go into the aid stations and these people would look at me and go, you were that girl that just smiled at every aid station last year. Like, you were having so much fun. Little did they know I would leave the aid station like, oh my God, this is so great. Like emotional, whatever else was going on, or IT band went out on the Cleeter Road descent and I hobbled in, but Mom didn't know until I got all the way to the finish line. And I hang on to that because I think what a great way to be remembered. And there's a little bit of that, like, I don't want to say fake it till you make it, but there was, I had to find that to be able to keep going forward, like literally because my mom would have taken me out. But I think in finding that, I was able to keep moving forward. So there's sometimes that just trying to find that energy of a smile, whatever that is that body language. If it's literally a smile on your face, if it's getting somebody to make you laugh, that can have a lot of effect in the rest of your life, honestly.
I love that story. It makes me think of David, the author of The Happy Runner. And I really think he should be the one to comment next on this. David?
Well, that's a beautiful story, Chrissy. Like, and you bring that all the time. Every time I interact with Chrissy, she makes me feel that energy, which I think is super powerful too. Like that it's not just in Chrissy's own race experience there, but it's like an energy that she gives into others. It's like, and lifts them up. But Chrissy, my question, my follow up would be, how do you suggest, like, outside of the race settings, like a runner that's starting out, let's say, like, how would they channel that? Particularly like in training or when things aren't so easy, like, do you have any suggestions for just the process of making it happen when, you know, it might be the furthest thing from what you actually want to do?
And this is awesome. Thank you, David, because I had another story I wanted to share. So this kind of allows me the in on that. So thanks for that. The first thing I would say, though, to that is take a gel. Take some calories. If your knee hurts, take some calories. If there's a pebble in your shoe, take some calories. Because everything seems harder when our blood sugar is low. So if we give ourselves something to work with before we, or as we address the issue, that often helps, especially when the comment you made of being the furthest from your mind. So I try and trigger that as my, like, oh, I'm feeling whatever. I probably need some calories. And that's in life too. Like, some that or as Glennon Doyle says in Untamed, a glass of water. Like a lot of times you might just need like a sip of water. Sometimes you need to take a bath. Sometimes you need to go put your feet in the ocean. But sometimes it's just like finding the little piece of reprieve in your own body. Can I tell the other story real quick, or is I getting?
No, you should tell stories because your stories are better than my story so far, easily. No. But it just made me think, when you eat or you drink, you're using your parasympathetic system. And when you're fight or flight, your sympathetic system. So you're fighting, you're flighting, you're battling out there. You take a drink of water, you have some goo, you use your other nervous system, and maybe you kind of bump that out of the way a little bit. Just a thought that came to my head.
Yeah, more than just glucose to the brain. I like that.
Chrissy, did you mention a book that you've read?
Oh, Untamed.
Untamed.
And Glennon Doyle's Untamed. Is that okay to say?
Yeah,
I love that book.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. I guess I need to get that book.
Catch up, Scott. It's a good book. One.
Yeah. Am I the only one that hasn't read that book?
Well, I'm not going to admit to it now that she said that. Hey, Chrissy, let's hear the rest of your story.
So the other story I thought of, because in terms of like you want to start, the question that we kind of got sent ahead of time is you want to start running. What's some tip of advice or whatever? And I remember this woman I met in New York City. I was there doing a talk for a running store, and she came down. We did a little run before, and then we all hung out, and I chatted with everybody after, but she came up to me. She wanted to make sure she got to meet me before the run and show me her water bottle, which was the company that I was representing at the time. So she had her water bottle, but she had bought it because the pocket was perfect for her red lipstick. And she would keep that red lipstick in that pocket and she would put it on before she went running. And I'm so expressive. I must have just been looking at her like, lipstick when you're run, like, what are you? She's like, girl, if I feel good, I run good. And I was like, that is so perfect. Like, whatever it is, like, do this because you love it and you want to feel good. This isn't a chore. You're deciding that you want to get out and run. So find the things that will keep it feeling good. And it can be anything, obviously, because we had a great conversation after that because she saw my face totally change. It was awesome.
Great story. I think that we started with the wrong person, Scott, because that's going to be – the bar is high now.
this group, easy. You guys got it.
I love the lipstick idea, though. That's like an incredibly cool thing. And one thing I learned on top of that from my wife, Megan, is even when she has a lot going on or she's like not – I mean, she's just like not feeling that bubbly energy. She'll always do a little dance, like because it's become her warm up is like a little dance. And I am a horrid dancer. I am like I don't have it. Just that those brain connections were never made for me. But and I won't even do it in front of her. But when she's not around, I'll do a little dance now because I've seen how well it works for her. So maybe that's my version of the lipstick.
Well, I think it's also a reason why we can see that Chrissy's been in this sport so long. It's starting off in the right way. She wasn't starting off because she had to do this to look good or because she had to win a race. It's because she liked it. And there were key things in there right at the beginning mm-hmm. that were really enjoyable and memorable that are still key parts of what you're doing today, Chrissy. So I think that's a really good lesson for people. You know, make sure you've got good reasons why, not just on race day, but why you run at all.
And her ovaries didn't fall out, so it's an extra.
And they didn't. I'm totally good.
It's a spoiler alert, Chrissy. You just ruined the story.
Hey, I want to, David. You had mentioned the dance thing. I've seen on YouTube. There's an Australian hurdler, a woman hurdler, that does this pre-race dance, and she's become actually really famous. I mean, she's a world-class athlete. But she has become very, very famous for that dance. And then I'm also thinking of a bobsledder from the Winter Olympic, the last Winter Olympics that used to put on headphones and dance around. And well, anyway,
I mean, this
I'm
is a great
dance.
It's a great template for me because, you know, I could be a TikTok star any moment if I just harness the power of the pre-run dance.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, you ready to roll the die?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here we go.
Number one. Okay, I'm ready. So similar to Chrissy, it's basically the first ultra that I got into. So it's kind of before the ultra and after the ultra. But I didn't start running as a collegiate athlete like a lot of the people I know these days did, where they were really fast track athletes and then they moved up in distances. I never did any of that. You know, I did the 100 meter hurdles or something when I was 12 and that's about it. But I did other sports and running was not considered fun. Running, not that it was the punishment, you know, that's that thing that people say, if that's the punishment for my sport. It wasn't that. It was just I didn't like the idea of only running and not running towards a ball and having like a team thing going on. But when I first got into it, it was because I'd seen this desert race in the Sahara called the Marathon du Sable. And I knew one guy who'd finished it and he'd basically walked the whole way. So I was coming to this not from the idea of like, oh, I'm a runner and all this stuff is very natural to me. I was starting from scratch, starting with, you know, decent level of sporting fitness at the age of 24, but not really any kind of idea about how to run 5,000 meters, never mind 50,000 meters or 100 miles or anything like that. But the first time that I ran 13 miles, I was building up because I'd committed to doing this desert race that's 150 miles in 7 days, but I had 18 months to train from zero. And so I thought, I've got to learn how to do all of this thing somehow. And there wasn't really like a group of people I knew. I just had one friend who'd been a really good half marathoner who was doing it with me, but he got out of shape. And I knew a couple of other runners who, again, kind of back of the pack people. So the first time I ran 13 miles, my hips ached. my shoulders ached, my everything ached, like bits of me that I didn't think I'd used on the run ached. And this was maybe 2 months, let's say, into starting running. So I'm starting to think to myself, how the hell does anyone run a marathon? And half marathon seems to be leaving me completely crippled and having to walk at the end. So the idea of doing this marathons back to back and ultras and this whole thing that I just started to learn about seemed absolutely insane. Like it wasn't physically possible because I couldn't see the gap being closed between where I was and where I needed to be. But then the thing that was really amazing to me was about a month after that, I did my first marathon. That's why I'd been building up the distances, and it went okay. And it helped that it was a really fun place. It was in Prague in the Czech Republic. So I had that kind of travel element to it. And it's a great place to go out and party afterwards as well. I mean, that they have good beer there. Mm-hmm. So it was a fun trip and everything about that was amazing. But after running 26 miles, I was thinking this hurt less than running 13 when I was less fit. And it's only 1 month difference. And you know, that's that exact timeline will be different for everyone. But it really brought home to me the idea that the body can do a hell of a lot more than you think you can. And so I always remember that when I'm in a bad patch in a race, I just think to myself, okay, well, it sucks right now, or I'm really struggling right now. But I know from experience, even from that very first beginning of it all, that it's possible for things to turn around and that your mind is typically going to be the weakest link rather than the body. And that as long as you put in some training, the body really does adapt to that. And I saw that about, was it 3-4 months after that first marathon when I did my first ultra, where I got to 26 miles, said to myself, this is the longest I've ever run. It was a 54-mile race from London to Brighton. And at about 26, 27 miles, I had to walk. And I was thinking, oh, this is less than halfway. I'm screwed. But yet, after about a mile of walking, I actually called up my friend on the phone who I was going to do that desert race with because he chickened out that day because he had to work, unfortunately. I still call it chickening out. And I called him and I'm talking to him. And after about 10 minutes, I said, you know what? I think I can run again. I think I can get moving, which is good because I thought I was done. And then it happened again at mile 40. And I called him again. And this time said, you know what? I'm going to talk to you for a bit, but I think it might come round. And just the epiphany that I got from that first year of running, of realizing how insanely amazing the human body is, that you can train it for anything. You can train it to deal with heat, to deal with cold, to deal with endurance, to deal with speed, to deal with any sport in the world. And you can be really bad at that thing at first. And then as long as you stick at it, you get so much better. So that's something that's always stuck with me and something that I really make sure that I'm telling people the whole time when I'm coaching them is even if they feel like they're nowhere close to where they need to be for race day or they're newer to running or they're taking on their first time at a new distance or their first ultra or something, I tell them that the human body can adapt and that they don't realize how much that'll actually happen, but they'll be surprised by it. And so that always sticks with me, and it's one of the most motivating things I can always think about when I'm having a bad patch in a race.
But one thing that I am constantly amazed that is related to that, Ian, is, you know, if you're out there training and doing stuff day after day, and you may not feel like you're improving, and then out of nowhere, randomly, you'll go out and have a training run that is just amazing. And you think, where did this come from? And it gives you that motivation that says, you know what, what I've been doing, the work that I've been doing is paying off. And sometimes it just doesn't seem like it's paying off, but then all of a sudden you'll have that one moment that you go, okay, I'm getting better. And I live for that. That's the most amazing
thing.
It's
not always a straight line of improvement. That's the thing. Like you're saying, it's like it can plateau for a bit and then suddenly you get a jump up and that you've just got to kind of stick at it. Admittedly, if there's injuries or overtraining or fatigue the whole time, maybe you're not going to be progressing. So you've got to allow for those things. But generally speaking, it's not like you, the things that you think are impossible probably aren't. They're just needing a bit of time to get there.
And Scott, you and I have talked about this metaphor that it's like shoveling gravel into a puddle and you just keep shoveling with blind faith that at some point that shovelful is going to pop to the surface, but you just keep shoveling. You don't know how deep the hole is. You just keep shoveling and all of a sudden, bam, like your fitness, bam, here it is. And it's such a welcome surprise.
I love that. And, you know, I have an experience. It was going to be my story, but since it's so overlapping with Ian's, I'm not going to share it in much detail. But, you know, when I came to running after I had quit college football, like 9 months later, I got like 200 meters and was sore for 3 or 4 days. And like, I had read all about training philosophy, like probably like someone listening to this podcast that's trying to get into running and had these grand ideas. And it was such a humbling experience, but I always come back to that because that experience is still mirrored today. Like I have like runs or especially returning that are just so difficult at first. So my question for Ian is like, you know, how does an athlete apply that? Like what lessons should they learn when it comes to their training in order to like, actualize this idea that the body can adapt? Like, is there a way for people to kind of like accelerate that process lovingly?
I'm not sure about accelerating. I'd say you can stop it, going backwards though, just by having that commitment. So particularly there's usually a kind of a hump in any sport or any new thing you're doing for a couple of weeks. Start weight training, it aches like hell for like 3 days afterwards, even if you've done lighter weights than you think you should be able to. Same with running. Like the first couple of weeks of doing runs, let's say it's every other day, every third day, it's going to hurt. You know, you're going to have sore muscles. You're going to limp around a little bit. You're going to think you're really bad at running and it's not for you. But if you just stick at it, get over that initial hump, then you start to get this progress. And that's what I've seen with everyone I've ever coached, no matter what standard they're at. But even if someone's coming back from an injury, even, you know, I can think about plenty of times when I've come back from an injury in off season and I've had like a week of achy, crappy runs, but I know that you just got to get over that initial hump and then the body starts reacting to it better. It's just giving the body a chance and time to do that. And so it doesn't take long to see those initial gains, but they keep happening and you really don't know where the upper bound of that limit is. So I never guessed when I first got into it that I'd even run a 3-hour marathon. And it took me, I think, 16 marathons to get to that point. But now I think of that as a training run and being, you're not that challenging. So you honestly have no idea what you're capable of doing until you give it a chance. Obviously, you've got to have commitment for that. But just knowing that it'll pay off, I think, is a really useful way to get over the initial stages of that. And then it's a bit more self-reinforcing because you're kind of happy with the progress you're making.
Your story is so remarkable. I love that.
But also so typical. Yeah. It's everyone's story, yeah. I think. It's just being aware that that's how it works.
I love that.
All right, are we ready to roll?
No pun intended.
No, here completely we go. Intended.
Number one again. Okay, I will choose then. I believe again. That's the way the rules work. I'm going to go for Scott.
Oh, good.
All right. You know, my story is more physical than mental. I had, it was the second race I ever did. So I did my first race I ever did was a 50K. Skipped the 5K, 10K, half marathon, because I wasn't a smart person. I'm still not. but it was the second 50K, and it was a little more mountain. So it was a 50K that no longer exists. It was up in the Tahoe area called Lake of the Sky 50K. I'd never run the trails up there. And anyway, so I go out there, and I had successfully completed my first 50K 3 or 4 months prior to that, and I was hooked. So I go out there and I'm just having a good old day. And probably about 20 miles in, well, even before that, I started feeling kind of some swimming around in my shoes and starting to feel a little bit of pain, not sure what was going on. And about 20 miles in, I thought, there's something going on in my shoes. And so I sat down on a rock or a stump, I can't remember what, and I took off one of my shoes and I peeled back my sock and the entire heel, not a tiny little blister, but the entire heel, the top couple layers of skin had detached. They were still intact, but you could see it was floating around, kind of like a waterbed. And I'm 20 miles in, I'm in the middle of a canyon, and I went, what is going on? So I put my sock back on and I completed it, got to the finish line in a very, very long period of time, sat down on the grass. There were a bunch of other racers sitting there. My family was there. And I told my wife, I said, I think I'm in trouble here. And I pulled off my sock. By then, the skin had actually ripped. But both of my heels completely blistered. And racers around me were just taking pictures and thinking it was the coolest thing in the whole world. So my lesson was, this blister thing has got to be solved. And it took me many, many years to figure it out. I've had the same thing when I ran Western States. I had huge blister issues. But my learning is, you cannot take your feet for granted. You have to prepare your feet. You have to protect your feet, and you have to take, be very careful and watch your feet throughout a race. If there's a tiny little bit of a hot spot, you need to address that right away. That's not something that you can work yourself through. So that's my story. Hopefully that's not too gruesome.
go ahead, Chrissy. And then I have a question for the coaches.
I was just curious if it was like something in your shoe, or I've also seen issues like with electrolyte imbalance, like causing our skin to be in a different state, or like type of sock you were wearing. Did we figure out what it was, why you blistered so badly, or was it just your skin had to toughen up, or what it was?
You know what? It was all of the above. The socks I was wearing were just normal socks. I tried two pairs of socks. I tried a thin pair of socks and a thicker pair of socks. I tried taping, different electrolytes, trying to make sure that my balance was right, the right fitting shoes, and running form. I think as I've increased improved my running form, especially going down hills, I wasn't moving as much. Frankly, the book Fixing Your Feet by John Vonhoff, it was a lifesaver. I've read, he's had like five different editions of that, and I've read that cover to cover and believe in it. So I don't think it was a pebble in there. A pebble wouldn't have caused my whole heel to peel off.
I had one more question you didn't mention that you tried to change there is lacing. So even if you've got the perfect pair of shoes, perfect pair of socks, if your lacing's off, your foot might be moving around in there a lot more and just getting a lot of friction. So that's another thing that that people should be bearing in mind, that they may have all the right stuff in the first place, but if there's a lot of different ways you can lace the shoes. You can just Google different running lacing patterns, and sometimes something as simple as that can make a big difference there. But it does highlight how much more difficult that is. All you were thinking about in that race, I'm sure, is my feet hurt, my feet hurt, my feet hurt, just on repeat. So any little inconveniences, any little things that ache or chafe or are annoying, ill-fitting clothing, similar things, then that's all you're going to think about. So you definitely want to keep yourself as comfortable as possible. And that not only makes it easier to run, because you're not going to be worried about that, but it lowers the perceived effort. So it'll actually make it you able to go faster for the same amount of effort, as well as not draining that mental energy and making everything more difficult.
I should have smiled coming into the aid stations, Chrissy, and I should have done a little bit of a dance. Of course, it would have been on my toes, a little dance like David.
So, hey, I've got two questions for the coaches. The first one is just a very short thumbs up, thumbs down opinion on for blistering and foot care, toe socks for long races. Ian, let's start with you and go 1, 2, 3. Ian,
thumbs down for me.
Chrissy.
She's a thumbs down too.
David.
Sideways.
Sideways thumb. I'm going to throw in there a thumbs up. I like them. I remember having some blistering in between some toes, and it was at Miwok back in the day, and the person told me, you need to get some toe socks. I had no idea what they were, and I started wearing them, and maybe I just haven't stopped because it worked. So I'm a thumbs up.
Bear in mind, that's not going to help.
I think whatever works. No.
So here's my heel question. And from the coaches, pre-taping, you see some people just being very careful and taping up their both feet, like it's artwork pre-race. What's your opinions on that?
So I have done that in the past.
Let's just start.
First of all, you have to learn through your training which areas tend to get that chafing, which areas you tend to get the blistering is going to be based on how you move and things like that and the shoes you're wearing. But I now don't do any of that. I try to instead get the best option for socks and shoes that works for me, so I'm not having problems at all. And I finish 100 milers with zero blisters, zero chafing, because I feel like I've dialed that in well enough. So I'd say it's better to do that. And you can practice this in your training races up to the big distance that you're doing. But I don't really feel like there's a need to tape if you can get the other stuff right. But while you're learning that, it may well help.
Good. Chrissy, do you have an opinion?
More so, I was more about putting things in. I used a, what was it called? It was 2 feet.
Tom's
was the brand.
Tom's. Yeah.
There it is. And it was like a Teflon powder that you put in your socks. And that was something that seemed to work pretty well for me. I used to duct tape my heels. There wasn't all this fancy, I guess there was always athletic tape, but I wasn't that with it. So I used duct tape, which then means you take off the skin. So I tried to work through that real fast because I didn't want to have that be the reality of my running. So I just found different socks and shoes, and definitely like lacing patterns. That was a good one that you brought up, Ian, is just changing, knowing the shape of your foot. So locking your heel in the back with a different lacing pattern. I have a really high instep, so I have to skip a lace to help rubbing on that. So just having really take care of your feet, which was the lesson that mm-hmm. you took out of it, Scott. Yeah.
And just to add one thing there. So if you find good shoes and socks, particularly because shoe models change every year, if you've just done like 100 miler and the shoes are working, buy a load of them just in case they screw it up and make it worse for the next year's model.
David, are you a pre-taper? Or do you advise people to do that?
I'm not personally, but I just encourage everyone to find what works for them and be flexible. Like one thing for beginners or especially that might be listening is different things work for everyone. And it's not just like preference. It also gets back to really complex like interactions of genetics and physiology mm-hmm. and things that might vary a lot from person to person. So that applies basically to everything when you're thinking about taping, obviously, but then, you know, basically almost everything else. There are some, you know, universal truths about running training that apply to everyone, but part of the fun is finding the unique blend that works for you. So, to not think that like, oh, just because you're different means that you're not doing it right. You might be doing it the exact right way for you. And I think the exploration of that is where a lot of the magic happens, particularly in the first few years where you don't know the answers.
Hey, my final one, Scott, I know your hands on that die ready to roll it. And this is similar to the toe sock, thumbs up, thumbs down opinion. How about pre-lubing your feet, greasing them up with your favorite squirrel's nut butter? I see people doing that. I've even done it. What are your thoughts?
Another sideways thumb. I'm never going to talk bad about lube, but I be careful with anything new.
Yep. Chrissy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate for myself personally, I'm thumbs down. Same on toe socks. David, I'm really glad you brought that up because it is really about finding what works for you. I don't like all that extra stuff between my toes.
Ian.
I'd say potentially, but the potential downside as well is that if you're in a dirty race on lots of dirt running through water, dust, it might get kind of stuck in there and get through the shoe. So it also depends on what type of shoe you've got, whether it's going to keep it out. And if it does get in there, it might be a bit more like sandpaper rather than actually helping you once it's got dirty. So it depends on other gear choices as well.
Sounds like trial and error when what works best for you and try nothing new on race
day.
Well,
on that note, here's a story I probably shouldn't tell. at 2016 Way Too Cool 50K, it was one of those years where it was just torrential rain. And I never thought I was like, I didn't even think about, you know, lubrication or anything. So went to a CVS or whatever, like the night before the race, bought like the family planning type of lubrication. Used that.
No way.
Used that the next day. And it worked like a charm. So, it kind of gets back to different things work for everyone. And sometimes those things are a little bit tingly.
I would figure you'd be effed with that one. I don't know. Okay. We'll edit that one out, Scott.
Before I roll the die, this is another quick just yes or no for the men. Did you learn about nippling up, which is taping your nipples? Did you learn the hard way or did you learn from a good trail friend?
I have never done this, but I do lube my nipples instead.
Okay.
Yeah. And I learned that from experience. Yeah.
So you learned the hard way, David?
The hard way. I think that it's so weird because now I feel like my nipples are indestructible. So perhaps they've been worn down to fine little pegs.
Don?
So I learned the hard way, no doubt. And then I thought I was a veteran. And then I'd actually run a very long race. It was a 100-mile race, and I had no nipple issues. And then I did a shorter race, but I put this old Patagonia shirt on that was like sandpaper. And so I'm like 20 miles in, and I've got two strips going down the front of me. And I'm like, really, I know how to do this. I shouldn't have this problem. And it's very awkward going into an aid station with blood coming down both sides of the front of your shirt.
Yeah, that's I also learned the hard way. And someday we'll relate the story of a friend or a brother of a very well-known lubrication company that has a picture on Instagram of him having chafing issues. And he is a veteran.
Yeah, if you ever want to get into Western States, Scott, again, don't tell this story. Yeah, but Greg,
right. There's enough photos of that, and I'm sure half the people listening may be aware of that.
All right, here we go. We're rolling the die. Here we go.
Roll it.
Four.
Oh, that's me.
That's you.
All right. Okay, good. So my story, and the one I told Scott, is I started running, and one day I looked in the mirror, I had my shirt off, and I didn't recognize the guy. I said, who is this guy? I better do something. I think I'll run. And I really didn't know any runners. I didn't aspire to be a runner. I just needed to burn calories. And I had run 11 miles. I worked up to 11 miles, and I really thought that I probably broke the distance record for humans, because that's how sheltered I was about this running stuff. And when I did that 11 miles, my knee was swollen. And so I was convinced that this is further than any human really should run. And so then I meet Jeff. We've mentioned him before on this podcast, Scott and I. And he said, hey, I just ran a marathon, and I'm just trying to make conversation. I said, you know, I've always wanted to run a marathon. And that's an absolute untruth. It's a lie. Because I'd figured 11 miles was my limit. Why would I volunteer to do 26? And he said, great, let's get together and run. And he was, you know, very dynamic and convincing. And I said, okay. And so I start running, and I start running with him. And boy, did I feel some of the things that you explained in your story, Ian. I felt my tops of my hip sockets. I mean, I started learning about anatomy I didn't even realize I had. And I ended up with shin splints that were happening. And they were so bad, but I wanted to run because of the community. Mike was next to me, and Jeff was next to me. I was right in the middle, and we'd run in the morning. And heck, it was only half a mile away from my house. I'd drive there because it was just so painful to run. And so I got with them, and I'd even close my eyes in the beginning and just try to endure this pain, just because, oh, it was just killing me. And so one day we went out for a long run, and it was on asphalt, and it was along the American River, and I was running, and that was it. I was done. Do you remember those shoes, those Mizuno Waves?
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah, they picked up rocks in the bottom of that little wave thing. And not a good shoe for me. And maybe it's my opinion is because of this moment. I said, guys, I'm done. I'm not running any longer. Just obviously, this is not good for me. So I took my shoes off, and I thought, I'm going to throw these shoes into that river that I'm running next to, and then I'll be done for sure. And then I saw the guys running off, and I walked in my own misery, telling my own story about how disappointed I was in myself. And I said, I've got to run. So I put my shoes back on, and I caught them at the turnaround, which would really mean they were coming back, probably is what it was. And I saw them. They were surprised to see me. And I had learned the lesson that I came away from there. That was very early in my running career. And I say that with definite quotes, because I'm not like the coaches that have all stood on the podium. My only experience with podiums was moving them after all the racers were gone. That was my experience with podiums, and still is. And so I learned from that moment that you need to be patient. You can't push. You can't just try harder. You can't just put your nose down or close your eyes and run or just endure it, because the body does have limitations. Oh, I agree with you, Ian. You can do more than you ever could imagine. You bet. That's a truism. But there is limitations. And if you just blindly push and try and go, you can destroy yourself. And you need to have some patience, pull back, maybe get a coach, let them steer you and give you a dose of reality, because I didn't have any. And I'm so glad that I decided to put my shoes back on, chase those guys back down, and then live to run another day. And then slowly but surely doing some exercises and strengthening up my anterior tibialis muscle by doing some toe raises where you bring your toes back to your shins and strengthening up. Running became a pleasure and enjoyable and social and fun and a big part of my life. I'm glad I stuck with it. And it really became part of a podcast. And so we wouldn't even be here had I not put the shoes back on that day, those Mizuno waves. So that's my story. Patience, perseverance.
I thought you said you threw the shoes. You didn't throw the shoes?
Well, no, because I ran. I wanted to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wanted to throw them into the river. I thought that would certainly seal the deal. I would be done running forever. Ian?
I've just got a quick question for everyone. So I'm guessing you'll be the same, but how many of you have, on a run, maybe when you were newer to it, found that the shoes are really annoying you or aching or something, and you took your shoes off and you walked it home with no shoes on? So just thumbs up and thumbs down, or hands up, who's done it? Not Chrissy, but the rest. So 4 out of 5 have done that then. So that's a pretty normal thing, that just like you're new to it, the shoes are the wrong shoes, or your feet are just aching, you're not used to it. That's, again, a really common thing.
Who's put a pair of shoes on and wore them because they looked so good that you just forced your feet in because they knew they made you look good? Yeah,
course,
I did that too.
Of course.
I think I had some La Sportivas that looked so fast, and I just wanted so desperately to wear them, but they were the wrong size in the shoe store. But I thought, nah. And then you get 5 miles in, and it's like, these are totally the wrong size.
Were those the purple ones?
Yeah.
I remember those.
And I think I love that story, Don. And I think it brings home, too, that like injuries are an inevitable part of the growth process for most people. I mean, there are some people that might be able to escape those cycles. But especially for beginners, to accept that like running, part of it is exploring your own fragility over time. And that doesn't mean you can't stay healthy, but it means that the flip side of adaptation is injury. So if you're pushing yourself anywhere near your potential, it will likely happen. And so, you know, to be patient and patient, as Don said, but then also kind with yourself and your growth, and understand that like those things that feel like massive setbacks might just be the body adapting over time. And sometimes things just suck. But that's part of the process too. And like every runner almost is right there alongside you.
Good.
And you learn a lot more when things go wrong. Like, Scott, I'm sure you learned a lot more about shoes and your feet and everything when you had your feet, basically the skin ripped off. if that had gone fine, you wouldn't have learned much from it in terms of how you could maybe keep improving that still.
Yeah, to your point, Ian, Scott knows a lot more about feet than I do and foot care, because I haven't had the problems that he has. So just because I haven't had problems, I'm naive, but he's an expert. And so you have to have some problems to learn.
And I will tell you, I've seen people at aid stations that are freaking brilliant at taping feet and helping in that regard. You know, John Vonhoff, he's out at races all the time, and he has people that he's trained how to take care of feet, and God bless them, because they are so awesome. We don't need to roll the die this time, because David is going to put a button on this. Is that the right phrase? That's not the right phrase.
Oh, I just bring all the buttons. It's my thing. So I'll tell this one pretty quickly, because I changed it on the fly, so I didn't overlap too much. But so in maybe 2017, I went all in for a race. It was in Europe. I was going to, you know, do everything for like 12 weeks on top of a great base and just, you know, crush it. And so really just went to the well and tried to see like, what can I do? A few weeks before, I had one of the best races of my life. Everything was looking great. The day before the race, I was interviewed by I Run Far. And it was going to be this like special moment. And so, you know, it's only a 50K. It was one of the world's races, and like mile 12, you know, I'm running near the top of the field, feeling really good, feeling really confident. And then all of a sudden start to feel like some weird cramping, which is not something I'd ever dealt with that much before. And by mile 15, like, you know, the excrement had fully hit the fan to the point that I was on the side of the trail at like mile 16 of a 50K, which, you know, why would this even happen? Like writhing in discomfort when Ladia Albertson-Junkins, like the lead woman on the U.S. squad, came by, and she just looks at me and is like, oh, poor thing. I'm so sorry. So eventually I went my way to the final aid station, and it just felt impossibly far. This is like mile 25 of a 50K, so it's not even that far in the big scheme of things. And so I'm just sitting there feeling a little sorry for myself. And that's when my wife, Megan, comes up, who is also having a poor day for her. And she looks at me, doesn't pause for even a second, grabs a handful of chocolate croissants, something they have sometimes at European aid stations, and just points at me and says, you're coming with me. So she proceeded to walk, jog with me the last 5 miles in. And I think I must have been dead last, close to that. And I mean, the lesson there is, one, that's the story that we tell, like, you know, at family reunions or stuff. Like, it's never some uplifting thing. Like, I look back at that with so much fondness. And two, it's that, like, it's just unpredictable how the journey goes. And through that process, like, it is about the stories, you know? So, yeah, that race could have ended well. It wouldn't have changed a thing in my life. But, you know, by learning to deal with, like, a little bit of adversity, I think it made me so much stronger as a person, not just in running. So, what I would say is, like, to look forward to the failures just as much as the successes, because I think that that's where the magic of this is, that in running, we can go all in on ourselves and learn and find out some answers. Even if those answers are just, you know, when the worst things happen, no matter what those are, I can get back up. So that's the message. It's kind of like Don's, put your shoes back on. Mine is just, you know, enjoy the failures as much as you possibly can. You know, feel it, but also enjoy.
You know, do you think that you can do that more in running, David, than you can in real life? I mean, that's a great real life lesson, to know that there's gonna be some crap and some down times in your life, but kind of looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, the stakes in running, I mean, they're just lower, you know, and that's not to say that what we do isn't important. It's just that, like, at the back of all runners' minds, unless you don't think about it at all, it needs to be like kind of the futility of our actions. But if you zoom out enough into real life, like, the same things start to happen to people when they contemplate, you know, really big things. Like, I mean, even things like death, you know, and you start to question your life decisions. Like, what is a midlife crisis but that moment? And I think the magic of being a runner is you run right up into your fragility. Like I was talking about, you run right into these things that a lot of people might not even have to face, outside of like very fleeting moments. So, you know, I think the reason a lot of runners talk in these big, big terms, almost sounding like Zen Buddhist teachers, is because, you know, we die 1,000 little deaths and we get back up.
I like it.
And I think that perfectly illustrates something, David, that if you don't have some failures along the way, and this is not just running, but everything, then you're not setting your sights high enough. You're not challenging yourself enough. If you always succeed in something, you're probably keeping within a big comfort zone for yourself. So the fact that you had this, a world championship, you're there trying to get, you know, medals and do the best you can for the country and really put yourself to your limit with your training and taking more risk. And then it didn't go well. That shows you there that you're aiming high, and it allows you then the next time you have a good race to know all the things that have to happen for that to be the case, and to value it more. But it's just knowing that if you don't have some setbacks, firstly, you won't be able to learn from them, and you learn a lot from when it goes wrong. But also, you won't value the achievements as much if they were too easy to get to.
Did you ever figure out why you cramped up?
Not at all. I mean, I have a bunch of theories that isn't worth getting into. An athlete I coached that was on the women's team had the same issue. So, I mean, it could have been like directly related to training approach going into this race, or it could have been something much more like simple, like nutrition or fueling or something like that. But whatever it was one of those things that was just a fleeting moment in my athletic life that hasn't come back. But I was full, to talk about dancing, I mean, full blown break dancing on the side of the trail with full body cramps. And whatever happened, like, maybe I was poisoned, honestly. Like, it was that hilarious. But yeah, I mean, even talking about it now, I can feel my hip flexors start to be like, wait, what are you talking about? Don't you mess with that again.
So as runners, when we want to share a lesson or a story, David chooses this one to talk about with he and Megan. But the one I would have thought of telling David was the dual victory at Way to Cool. And I don't know what year that was. You do, I'm sure. The first place winner for the male, David. First place winner for the female, who happened to be working a night shift and showing up, was Megan. And you guys were 1-1 on that podium. And that sounds like a story to learn from. But the story you pick was a story about writhing in pain on the side and somebody shoving these croissants in your face to finish off a miserable last 5 miles.
Yeah, I don't think you learn that much from like things going according to plan, right? In almost anything. And that's not to downplay like how amazing those moments that we all have are and how much they deserve to be celebrated. But like where I really want to find the magic, and for the athletes on our team too, is to like savor those more tasty morsels in life, you know, that have a little bit of like the full umami flavor of like the writhing on the ground, rather than something that, you know, fits a Disney like happily ever after narrative. Give me one of the Pixar movies that's all about secretly about like death and coming to terms with depression. And I think that, you know, we'll learn a lot more on the way.
So David, would you say that race in some ways means more to you and is a better memory than ones where you won?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, you know, especially like the ones where, I mean, I think all of us could talk to this, like they're interesting and cool, but I also think less like identifiable, you know, like you watch Michael Jordan on The Last Dance, the big documentary. And I'm like, he seems like a person totally disillusioned with himself, you know, where success became this thing that is the only option. You know, and I mean, for me, at least, that is where self-acceptance and self-love come from, is hitting whatever the individual rock bottom is. Obviously in running, it's not that big of a deal, but in other things too, and being like, wait, I still love myself, or I'm learning to love myself through this. And you know, that's why it's such a good memory, because I remember just laughing so hard that, you know, my abs were sore to the point that they would then start cramping up at myself. And I think that we all probably have those experiences. And I mean, I don't understand why anyone would do ultra running if not for that type of reason. Otherwise, like, there are hobbies to choose that might be a little bit less risky.
Well, Scott, fortunately for us, we'll never have to indulge a victory. And so we get the most out of this sport every time we go out.
Yeah.
That's actually a great point, though. But you've created one of the biggest podcasts in this world, you know, and that I'm sure. No, it's a fact. Like, as I started to understand more about podcasts, like, you know, it's this institution that's so successful. So like, you know, it gets to the point that like we all have wins at everything, but I'm sure you had failures along the way in the podcast too, you know? And it's just, I think everything in life can fit that type of like really cool, full like narrative, as I saw Scott earlier doing with his hands, like an up and down thing as Ian was talking.
I was trying to break dance, like, David. I was trying to break dance.
You're popping and locking. And I think we're just looking at that popping and locking journey.
So you guys just don't play coaches on this podcast. You're actually coaches. How do we get a hold of you? What if we're inspired? We want to be led through some of these challenging times or towards one of those podiums. How do we get a hold of you? What's the best approach?
By the way, this will be in the show notes as well. So if you want to check the show notes, there's links to each of their places. But Ian, where do we find you?
So my website is shamanultra.com, and then on all social media at @ShamanIan. So Charmanian.
And also a podcaster at
and also, yeah, magazine articles. I do the Podium Runner Endurance Podcast. I try to be out there plenty of ways, like all of these guys.
Chrissy, where do we find you?
If you can spell my last name, you can find me anywhere. It's M as in Mary, O-E-H-L, and I'm K-R-I-S-S-Y. So website, Instagram, I'm not that creative at nicknames, so just go with the Chrissy Mail, whatever it is, and I'll respond. I love hearing from people. The Running Your First Ultra book is out there. I sell that on my website. I am not a podcaster. I just play one on your show, and I love getting to be here with you guys. It always brings a lot of energy to me. Thanks.
Oh, we love it too. Thanks for showing up.
Great book, by the way. This is a book that you need to have in your library running your first ultra. It's a phenomenal book.
Thanks. I've had a lot of great feedback. People sharing their experiences. Who knew that writing a book could mean I get to hear about all these people's first journey into ultra. It's awesome.
And David.
Yeah. And I would second Chrissy's book because especially for the topic of this podcast, it's like perfect. And so some work all play podcast that I do with, Megan. And then otherwise we're all over the internet, just like Chrissy. I also want to second that I've gotten emails from many people coached by both Ian and Chrissy that say they are freaking fantastic. So it is not just in the words, it is in, the daily actions. So yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity.
And your book, The Happy Runner, David.
Oh yeah. I have a book as well. it feels like ancient times, but yes, The Happy Runner.
So what we need to do is we need to work on Ian's publishing skills. He needs to write a book. Chrissy needs to start a podcast. And David, you're doing it all, man.
I need to avoid telling the lubrication stories on that.
You said it's so deadpan too. I was like, wow.
David, you need to.
David, was that the year that you won Way to Cool?
That's the twist that has never been told until this day. I was glistening, and it was also a little bit of hot and cold action going on. Maybe that's the secret of it all. Maybe they should do a study on that.
Yeah, the secret sauce.
David, I think the only thing you're missing out on now is you need an Instagram handle just for your solid nipples.
That's one thing. Worn down little pegs.
David's solid nipples. There you go. Jump on it, you guys.
Hey, coaches, thank you so much. We really enjoy the time we spend together, and you guys are always dispensing wisdom that we can all learn from. We hope that the listeners this time came away with not only some good stories that they can embellish and tell on the trails with their friends, but also some good, wise advice so that you can become a better runner yourself. So
yeah, if you don't have a story of your own, feel free to take one of these and change the names and use it. We share around here.
Mom mail is great for everybody to make them smile. She'll do it for anybody.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Go out and run.
Mas.